Welcome everyone to my new podcast, Therese Makes History. Well, my name is Therese Sweeney and I've been producing history since the mid-90s. I've initiated much of my work, spending my years embedded in community, in the field, with residents in their homes, on their streets, at their clubs, in their market gardens and farms, observing with respect their daily lives, capturing often communities that aren't seen by the wider populations. I have the luxury of being trained in both analog and digital technologies when I was at university, although I taught myself the analog camera on the job. But I left the metropolis 13 years ago and moved down the south coast. My partner and I bought a lovely little dairy cottage on some acreage at the end of Hannigan's Lane, Bowlong. It was Harry Bell's old place. I was obsessed with the double silos that you could see over our fence. We were surrounded by 3,000 acres of land with beef cattle. I loved it. Camberwarra Mountain in the distance felt very supportive. Why did I get obsessed with the silos? I never stopped photographing them, but at the time, I had begun a major commission with Belgany Farm, Camden Park Estate, which is owned by the Department of Primary Industries. Fundamentally, recreating 20th century history through the voices and knowledge held by former employees of the estate. Many, many dairy hands, workers associated with the dairy industry and managers. Of course, there was a big research centre there. So I suppose I started to like dairying whilst I was living down here. We ended up moving off the land and for the last 2 years have lived in Berry. What I'm doing is initiating a project which I'm calling the Dairy Lane Project. Between Bomaderry and Berry, there are approximately 18 lanes, most named after pioneering dairy families dating back to the 1850s. White Anglo-Saxon Europeans that migrated here. After David Berry's death in 1889, the first subdivision of the lands accumulated by that family were released for sale to the general public. Some 60,000 acres. Many of the tenants that were leasing the lands from the estate were in a position then to purchase. And the descendants of those lands are the people that I'm engaging for this project. This is a colonial history. I have secured a part sponsor for season one, Turf Co., based in Jasper's Brush on the Princes Highway. They're our region's largest agricultural employer and have been operating here for 40 years. Thank you, Gavin Rogers. I appreciate your support toward realising this podcast production. I now introduce to you Robin Florence, OAM. Robin is a known local historian in the region and has been writing books for local history societies since the 1970s. Is highly regarded. So I welcome Robin to participate in an interview with me in positioning the beginning of this vast dairying history. How long have your family been in Berry?
My grandfather, my great-grandfather came here on the Berry estate in the 1890s.
Was that paternal side or maternal?
That's my paternal side. And he had a farm at Moyanne, and my grandfather, Harold Bruce Fenwick Holland, was born there in 1895.
And what about the maternal side?
My maternal side, my grandmother, I called her Ma and I called my grandfather Bruce because that's the only name I ever heard him called. She was born in Tilba Tilba in 1904 and came to Broughton Vale to stay with friends, and they went out to Seven Mile Beach and they met my grandfather and ended up getting married in the Presbyterian Church in Victoria Street. But it was the one at the top of the hill, not the one down the bottom.
So Berry had its own council, did it? Can you explain that and maybe what time frame, if you recall?
All right, so there were seven councils in the time when the Municipalities Act came into being in the 1890s. So then there was Broughton Vale Council, there was Gerringong Municipal Council, Bomaderry and Bury Council, Clydeshire Council, Camberwarra Council, South Narrow Shoalhaven Council, and they all, in 1948, they all joined and became Shoalhaven Shire Council. Then in 1979, they became Shoalhaven City Council.
Because the areas really had their own lives, like even Jasper's Brush, for example, had its own entertainment, had its own railway station.
Most of the little villages, they usually had a school. Not all of them had a shop or a store. The post office was usually in the school. So there was an area in this residence at the school for the post office.
How many sawmills were there around then?
Most places had a sawmill because the timber was one thing that they built their houses for. So, yeah, I'm not sure of how many were in actually Bury. Molloy's had a sawmill down near the railway station. But my great-grandfather's was in Victoria Street that went back to Princess Street. And
what were they cutting?
I can't tell you what he was cutting. I've got photos of him sitting in the sawmill. But he did a lot of jobs. So timber cutting was one thing, but he was also a milk carter. They did all sorts of jobs in those days. They weren't just specific. But he employed a fair few people, yeah.
So was all the cedar gone then, or was he cutting cedar, you think?
He would have been getting it from Woodhill Mountain. So he lived at Woodhill, and when the butter factory went into liquidation, he actually purchased the building and moved all the timber down and built a house joining his sawmill in Victoria Street.
So this is all pre-mechanisation?
Well, yeah, 1930s. We used to walk everywhere.
Yeah, so tell me a walk.
Well, Victoria Street in those days to the Princess Highway wasn't opened. And I used to walk up Victoria Street to I think it's on George Street. And then the blackberries were there, and we used to pick blackberries and take them home, and she used to make jam and pies out of them. And then we often walked up over the hill to friends of hers. And we often walked to Crozier's Lane in Jasper's Brush because my auntie lived on the corner in the blue house. And sometimes I can remember my grandfather coming to pick us up because he had it's an Austin Prefect, is it? A little car? Yeah.
What colour was the car?
Green.
With the lanes, were they named?
A lot of places, well, where I was born, for example, it didn't have a number. It was Dundee. I was born at Dundee, Victoria Street, Bury. And, well, if you had a lane, so Hitchcock's lived on the end of a lane which is called Muller's Lane. I didn't take notice of the names then. Crozier's, I used to walk up to the Forks's right at the end of Jasper's Crozier's Lane. Yeah.
Was it called Crozier's?
I've got no idea. Okay. I was only six.
Yeah.
I'm only remembering things that, yeah.
How'd you get across the highway? Was it, so it was a road?
There was no traffic then.
Yes.
We used to walk. I can remember walking. Wish I could walk now.
Are you on the go for now, are you? in case you are, I don't mean to be disrespectful. Okay, so you walked. So what did Bury look like? Was it little cottages, little wooden cottages and sparse, or?
I used to walk every week. I used to walk down there to Bury with my grandfather to go to pick up the Bury Register. And Mr. Higgins was the editor of the Bury Register then, and he lived down in the corner of Victoria Street, and I used to play with his daughter. I don't remember very much about houses. I don't suppose I was interested in the houses.
What about the showground? Was that operating?
Yeah, the showground was operating, and we used to go to the Bury show. We'd sit in the can't remember going to the berry show with my grandparents or my parents, but I took my own children to the berry show with my grandmother. Yeah.
What were some of the big names there? Do you recall sort of the big shorthorn breeders?
There was a lot of them, but I wasn't a farm girl. I was interested in the cattle parade and the horse jumping and the wood chopping that went on, yes.
Did you ride horses yourself?
Only later, not when I was in Berry.
So you got married to who and when?
I got married to a Paul Florence in 1970. And I have three beautiful children, Michelle, Matthew and Nicole. And Matthew lives at Shoalhaven Heads and Nicole lives in Shepparton in Victoria, and sadly Michelle died of cancer 5 years ago.
Sorry to hear that. Can I? Okay. So did you have anything to do with Nowra, or was it just Berry when you were sort of growing up?
No, I didn't have anything to do with Nowra. I can't remember even. I used to watch outside Fossey's. My uncle was in the Nowra Town Band, and his brother was George Seymour. And I can remember standing outside what was Fossey's building then, and they had caps in their hand while they were playing music to raise money funds, but that's about it. I can't remember anything else about Nowra.
Were they raising funds for?
For the town band.
For the town band.
The Seymour boys were in it and the Harvey boys were in it, yeah.
So Berry used to be called another name, didn't it?
Broughton Creek.
Yeah, so.
Well, Broughton Creek, well, Broughton, it's part of the Berry estate and it was called after Broughton because of the Broughton Creek. Yeah, so the Broughton Creek went through it, yeah. So Bomaderry's got a creek as well.
Okay, now for those people that don't know, briefly, I'm going to ask a bit of description of the berries, the names. So I've got them written here. I know two of them, but...
All right.
So Alex.
Alexander Berry.
Yeah.
He came, he was a, I suppose, an entrepreneur in what we call them today. And he came down to the south coast in 1822 and spied a property he liked and he called it Coolangatta. And that's where the Berry estate started. It was 10,000 acres to start with. And he had a few convicts. And so then he had his brothers come out from Scotland. And his brothers and his sisters came out from Scotland and they stayed at Coolangatta. And he moved up to Crow's Nest and lived up there with his partner, Wollstonecraft. And then a brother died, John Dry died.
Do you know when he died, roughly?
In the 1870s from a fall from a horse. Yeah, he died, and so then they started, David Berry actually was the one who was started all the tenants, and they started tenants' farms. So you had tenant farms from Gerringong, Toolajura, Fox Ground, Broughton Village, Camberwarra, all this northern side of the river, Shoalhaven Heads, Bowlong, and then on the southern side of the river they had Number, Upper Number, Piree, Greenwood Point. It was a vast estate.
Who was William Berry? Do you remember him?
He was a brother. He died as well, so there was all that was left was David in the end, and David ran the estate with his cousin Sir John Hay. And David Berry's will, he left a lot of money to St Andrews University in Scotland and other things, and it was going to, he had to sell off some of the land. Most of the tenants who occupied the farms from the 1860s were allowed to purchase their properties if they wanted to. So a lot of the tenant farmers actually bought the properties they'd been renting for years.
So we're talking sort of from the Church of England. So
So the Wesleyans or the Primitive Methodist or the Methodist, they were around because you've got a lot of those early churches were Wesleyan.
What is Wesleyan?
Wesleyan was after John Wesley and he was the minister and, well, Primitive Methodist they used to be called. So that's why you've got churches. So the church at Maru was built by the estate, and the one at Greenwood Point was built by the estate.
The auctioneers, did you ever hear, you know, Stuart and Morton were the Stuart auctioneers?
John Stuart was lived at Mananga at Berry, and the Morton family, well, they were at number to start with. H.G. Morton then went to, he came out and worked for Alexander Berry. And then his sons, he had eight sons, I think it was eight sons. And, yeah, so that's where the auctioneers, Stuart and Morton, yeah.
So there was a lot of land being sold.
Oh, yes, a lot of land. And because Morton was very well known by the Berry family and Sir John Hay and Alex Hay, that's when, yeah, they started.
And what about Stuart from Berry?
Well, he was the first Stuart, was the postmaster at Berry on the bottom end of Mananga. That's where the post office was. The silos were built in the 19... Well, the ones at Bowlong were built by Tetley, and he didn't build them until the 1930s. But you've got to remember that these were farmers, and their only social life was either the church or sport. So you've got the Berry Magpies. They were playing football in the 1880s.
And that club still exists today.
Exists. Even though it was rugby union, it still exists as a leagues club. Yeah, league club, yeah. Rugby league.
Do you recall the clubs that started up? Like, what was there anything at Jasper's Brush, for example?
Well, Jasper's Brush had the School of Arts, and they had a tennis club. A lot of them played tennis. Broughton Village had a tennis club, and they used to play Maru. Can't remember Jasper's Brush, but and Berry, and Tooladjua, Crooked River. So that sport was the main thing. So the farmers had to have something to get them away from the farm. Most of the cricket was played between milking, so they could get home to milk. Yeah.
Sorry, were the cricket grounds or just something made on the...
Just something made, so they'd have a pitch on a paddock somewhere. So they'd have to pick up all the cow pats before they played. Yeah, so that it was like the golf club in Berry. The golf club started in the 1940s, I think, and on a private property. And so before you played golf, you had to go around and pick up all the cow pats and make it so you could play.
Are you still in Berry today?
No, I live in Bomaderry.
Okay, so there was quite a lot of land being sold at Bomaderry as well in that, you know, from an early part. At
the same time. So Bomaderry was a 1859, Bomaderry began, and it was a Berry estate property, and then it was sold off in the 1890s. Yeah.
Would they have all been farmers predominantly?
You had blacksmiths, you had other things, you had the milk had to be carted somewhere, so you had all those sorts of jobs that went with the farming. You had the butter makers, and then most of them had a small little factory. So, for example, Jasper's Brush had a little butter factory, so people worked there. You had to have someone to bring the milk in, weigh it, all those sorts of things. So they weren't just farmers, because farmers still had their other services that they had to use. Yeah.
What produce was being grown?
Wheat was no good because it started to get rust, so you don't have anything like that. But I think they grew sorghum and those sorts of grasses to feed back to their cattle, and if they had horses as well, yeah.
There would have been a lot of land clearing.
There was a lot of land clearing, and in those early days, that's what the tenant farmers... So, say, for example, in 1850, someone took up a grant at Jasper's Brush, they might get start off with 60 acres, and they'd only pay... they wouldn't pay anything until they'd cleared a bit of land, and then the estate would build them a house, and then they would pay off the house. In a lot of early records, it says they were paid by bushels of wheat. But in later on, it wasn't. They had to pay by pound, yeah.
So it started off as a barter.
Well, it was like that. They gave them free rent I think it was for 2 years, while they cleared the land.
Yeah. It's a hell of a job, isn't it?
Yeah, it was a big job because you've got to remember there was no, it was just axe.
I've seen some of the equipment. Yeah. Young Richard Box will show me a few things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maru Meadow and Bomaderry. They were called two separate names because Bomaderry was a different area.
That's right. So they were all different areas. They were all little villages.
Can you define the Bomaderry area for me?
Okay, so Bomaderry went from the northern part of the Shoalhaven River out to a boundary with Bowlong on one side and Canberwarra on the other, and Maru boundary. Now, Maru boundary, I think, started at Exeter Farm. I'm not sure about Fletcher's Lane in Bomaderry was Fletcher's Lane in Maru at one stage. So they've changed the boundaries. Bomaderry, in those early days, until the railway came, there wasn't a lot of... Bomaderry was really on the other side of the railway line, so it was called Bomaderry Point. And so you didn't have transport like you've got today. You had the punts and ferries crossing the Shoalhaven River. And they would come up Broughton Creek, and they would have a store there, and they had a wharf. And then you'd go to Bowlong, and you'd go up Broughton Creek, and you had the ferry house and the punt to go across the river. And in 1904, it didn't really start. Bomaderry really didn't start moving. They had a small school that was started by a farmer's wife, and they didn't have a lot. The Presbyterian Sunday School wasn't built till 1895, so nothing really started till the land was sold.
Okay. Coolangatta, the estate, the old estate that still exists today, is that for sale at the moment?
Yes.
It's a big thing, isn't it?
Yes, a big fee. 14 million or something.
Okay, so for those that don't know, Coolangatta Estate are the original farming buildings. Was it like Camden Park to a degree?
Yeah, sort of like Camden Park. They had the big. They had a big area. They had a...
like a main farm?
No, they had the farm, but they just... Because it was all rented, they rented their... They were all on lease around the big farm. So the big farm was like the service centre. So in the early days, Jimmy Sooner, a Chinese, he was their storekeeper. He was their, I suppose, keeper of their stock and things, and people used to go to him and they'd be handed out their rations or their if they wanted to buy food, and that he'd look after that for them.
What was his last name?
Sooner, S-U-N-A.
And... Do you know about him? Tell me about Jimmy.
Well,
and you're laughing.
When the convict system finished, they had a lot of trouble finding workers because a lot of them were leased, farms were leased. And so they brought out German immigrants to do the wine growing, and they were called vine dressers, and they brought out Chinese... and they brought some from Maoris from New Zealand to look after, to work for them. You had a lot of Chinese, but you had a lot of Aboriginal workers on the estate too that married into them. So you had the Germans. So start off with the Chinese. We had Jimmy Sooner, we had the Gosangs. And I can't tell you any other names at the moment because it's out of my head.
Do you know how to spell the Gosangs?
G-O-S-A-N-G. And I wrote a history of the Chinese in Shoalhaven, and I wrote the history of the Germans in Shoalhaven.
Okay, so you've spoken about the Chinese. What era is this?
1850s.
Gee, that's early. So the
is after convicts. So 1849, the convicts really stopped, and so they had to look for other migrants or people. That's when they brought the Germans came out, and the Sooners, 1855. Chinese immigrants.
Can I go to Jasper's Brush? And they had a railway station there that's right. No longer there.
Yep.
would have been built for the creamery or what?
No, so in 1893, the railway only went to what we call now is, was North Kiama. They never crossed the creek, so it had to come into Kiama. So in 1893, they extended the railway from to Kiama and all the way down to Bomaderry. Now, they couldn't go across the bridge at the time because the bridge was not heavy enough, couldn't carry the weight of an engine because we've got diesel and fuel engines here now and they're very heavy. And even when they built the new bridge, they couldn't get to the bottom with all the equipment and everything they've got. So the railway came through in 1893 and it came through most of the Berry Estate. And when it came through the Berry Estate at Jasper's Brush, David Berry gave the land for the railway station. So you had one at, so it started off with Kiama, then you had Rose Valley, then Omega, Gerringong, Tullajua, Berry, Jasper's Brush, and Bomaderry.
That's quite a few stops.
There was a lot of stops, but they used them because, that was once the transport came, that was the best thing because they could send their milk to Sydney on the train.
So these might have been properties, perhaps, or?
Yeah, it's all estate properties. From Gerringong down, it was all Berry Estate.
Yeah. On that side of the highway that has a lot of water. So on the Bowlong side,
yep.
What sort of impacts were the floods and the water on production?
On Bowlong,
All through there, Maru Meadow.
Yeah, the whole lot. It was awful, but that's how it was. That's how they cleared the land, but that's the water was still coming down. Yeah. So in 18, there was Tarera and those sort of places were wiped out. So Bowlong lost a lot of land, where the punt used to go across. That area was in the middle of the river now because the river's just taken the sides of the land and always will, yeah. So the floods had a big impact, but they all got over it and got on with their lives.
As they do today.
Yeah.
So, but it did affect some crops probably.
The crops would have, and they would have had to get their cattle. They lost a lot of cattle, and they had to move their cattle to higher land. Well, at Bowlong, when do they move their cattle to higher land? There's no higher land.
Like, I recall I read something where a lot of the farms originally that came to Bowlong moved north.
Yeah, a lot of people went to the Richmond River. They all went to the Richmond River. So if you read anything about it, whether you're in Fox Ground, whether you're in Bowlong, they went to the Richmond River.
Where is the best land in this Shoalhaven region?
Well, where the farms are. where the farms are. So I'd say, Garrity's farm at Bowlong, Glen Albus, it was really flooded. And it's the boundary of it is the Shoalhaven River. So, yeah. So it's always been under. And that's where the Manildra factory is and everything out there. So you can know where all the water is. Yeah.
In the early days of Manildra, were they processing dry milk?
Yeah, malted milk.
What era there are we talking about?
Well, I used to have malted milk in my drinks, my uncle, when I used to come down to visit. It was a malted milk factory.
Is that when you get a malted milkshake?
Yes. You used to buy it in a container and spoon it in. I can remember it was a creamy colour. I can remember a creamy colour and we missed it. Put spoonfuls in your milk.
Most of us might have only had... I remember getting a milkshake having a malted milkshake.
You don't get them anymore. You can't see them malted anymore.
So what... Did I ask what sort of era that was? It was when you were a little girl?
Yeah, that's the 50s. Yeah, still the 50s, yeah.
How important was dairying to this region? It was obviously a chief industry, but...
It was the only industry, really, that did anything for this area. It was dairying. There's a, a lot of the timber places like Tomorong and those sorts of places, Kangaroo Valley. Well, Kangaroo Valley wasn't the Berry Estate, so it was the Osborne Estate. So, and Tomorong wasn't the Berry Estate, so yeah, completely different.
I wonder how Kangaroo Valley feels about Berry.
Yeah, very close. A lot of families went to Kangaroo Valley or Kangaroo Valley. In those early days, without being awful, they used to get married over the back fence. So there wasn't a lot of people around. So Mrs. McCauley's daughter would marry Mr. Smith's daughter and they'd move and then they might move to Kangaroo Valley and, yeah.
So it wasn't arranged, but that's what happened.
Yeah, that's what happened, yeah. So that's where they met. That's why you had a School of Arts at Jasper's Brush where people could meet and dance. You had the Maru Hall at Maru. You had the Berry School of Arts and you had, yeah. So everywhere there was somewhere that you could actually go to meet people. Yeah, Bumaderry had a hall where you could go dancing.
How would they all get there?
Horse and cart in the early days.
Hmm.
There used to be a bus that went from Nowra to Bumaderry to pick up people to take them to the Maru, Jasper's, I think it was Jasper's Brush as well as Bumaderry. They used to, and then they'd have dances, yeah.
So when you say Fletcher's Lane, do you know who Fletcher's Lane was named after? So do you want to talk about, just briefly, you know, like so
Fletcher. Well, Fletcher's, yeah, the Fletchers lived in Fletcher's Lane. John Fletcher, if I can remember correctly, John Fletcher. Yes, and they had a property there and they had something to do with the Jasper's Brush or Maru Butter Factory.
So they were all...
Come back to me another time.
I will. Okay, I'll give you a call. So I know it's hard, isn't it, when there's a lot of information in that brain.
Too much.
Yep. So... All the lanes from Bomaderry to Berry are named after dairy farmers?
Most. Schofield's Lane, for example, that I came... Schofield's Lane was named after Schofield the butcher in Berry, and he had his cattle... He probably would have had his cattle out where Schofield's Lane is now. Then his son moved to Nowra, and we've got a Schofield's Lane in Nowra because his son had the butcher shop on the corner of Schofield's Lane. Pyrie Lane is named just because it was Pyrie and it was the lane that led out to Kalala and those places in those days. A lot of them were named after farmers. In the early days they were, but for example, where you live was named after a First World War enlisting from Berry. So it's changed.
So were you saying what was that name?
That was Andrew Tresidor. And he was, his name was spelt with one S, but they never changed it, yeah.
What do you know about Huntingdale Park Estate for those new residents?
Before, when I was growing up, it was just vacant land, and the Pulsfords from Broughton Village used the flat area for their cattle. Yeah, so they used to bring their cattle here from Broughton Village. So this is where they... You know, they'll spell their cattle. Yeah. And, yeah.
Okay. So
I don't know anything about Huntingdale Park.
There was these subdivisions, Jerry Bailey subdivisions at Coolangatta.
All right. So that was John Hay. So you've got to remember that John Hay was born at Coolangatta but went back to New Zealand to live. And then when he came back over to look after the estate... he had Alex Hay as well. So that was called the Hay Estate to begin with because it was on the other side of the area that wasn't really tenanted. As far as I can gather, it wasn't tenanted, but he used to use the wharf there. So on Hay Road at Shoalhaven Heads is a wharf, and he used that wharf to get all his produce to Sydney and things back. Then they started a reserve out there, and that was in the 1930s. So it wasn't... Alexander Hay didn't sell that land for a long time. It wasn't actually sold off at the same time as the tenant farmers. So that... And We really don't know where the name Gerry Bailey came from. I know the lady who wrote the book on Shoalhaven Heads says it was named a certain way, but Alan Clark and I have never found that reference.
The reason I ask are because obviously the maps that were with the land selling over those two 12-month subdivisions.
Yeah, they were later. In the early days it was called Gerry Bailey by residents. In 1955, the residents of Gerry Bailey wanted the name changed to Shoalhaven Heads. So it was always known as Gerry Bailey. The same as Crooked River used to be known as Crooked River, now it's Jarrowa.
For people that might look up maps or for kids, they need to understand, well, here's Gerry Bailey map, what does this mean? But it was called, locals referenced it as Gerry Bailey.
Yeah, it used to be a road from Bomaderry through to Nowra, from Broughton Creek to Nowra. And it was in 1859, I think, they built a road. But it all had to go through the Berry Estate. So the Berry Estate had to approve of giving land for the roads. And a lot of the tracks, they were only tracks, so only ponies used to go along them, because they used to cart their produce on either side of a saddle on a horse, so they only had to have a horse. So they didn't have a big, wide road until, well, they had to have carts. They brought the carts in, and then it wasn't really widened till the motor car came into. But Strong's and the top of them, I think, were the Harveys at Jasper's Brush. They had to get in and out, so they had to get all their produce in and out. First of all, to get it to the railway, then the trucks used to have to come in later years when the milk trucks used to come to collect the milk. So they had to have the proper roads then.
How hard would it have been for those properties in the higher elevations to cart milk down? And
very, very, very hard. And I really don't understand why anyone would live right on the top of something like that, because you only get the wind and then you slopes. Even today, you look at some of the houses and the slope to get the car up into the garage is so big. Yeah, I just don't know how they did it, but that was the properties they wanted. And as the Strongs are still on that property, so it's good land.
Well, yeah. The Boxalls, the Richards there, Richards, it's not a nice drive.
No, that's right. But and even like Pestles Lane and all those places, Pestles Lane was one of the early lanes, and they had a couple of Berry Estate cottages along there at one stage.
Yeah. So Pestles, Richard remembers money lenders. The family were money lenders. Do you know anything more about the Pestles?
Mm. I started writing the history of the Jasper's Brush, and so I've got a lot on the Pestles. But Pestles, I don't know whether Pestles Lane's named after the family of Pestles or the Pestle who died in the First World War. So I actually can't tell you any information about that. And same as Boxall's Lane. Was Boxall's Lane after Richard Boxall, who served in the First World War?
Well, they have their own story on that, don't they?
That's right, yeah.
And it makes it difficult then for that next...
Well, you don't know where it was named. It's a bit like...
Well, Ray Strong, for example, had two of his grandfather's brothers on council, and he feels that's why Strong's Road might have been influenced to have been named that.
It could have been.
So where do we get to saying yes or no?
Sometimes you can prove it. Sometimes the Geographical Names Board. Today you've got to go through a Geographical Names Board to get it gazetted. So a lot of the roads had to be gazetted. So that's where you get some of the names from. But other than that, it's just that in the early days where I was born, just go to Mrs. Holland, you'll know where she lives. They didn't have to give an address because everyone knew everyone. So if they wanted to go to Mrs. Huntingdale, they'd just say, oh, down at Mrs. Huntingdale. So everyone knew everybody, and so they knew where they all lived.
Because they weren't really structured roads with signs, were they?
No. So Victoria Street in Berry is a wide street because it's got the courthouse and it's got the pavilion on the showground. And so that was a bit wider. But I don't know why it was wider, because it never went to the... There was no end to it at the end of Victoria Street.
So were the police active in those early years?
Yeah, over in Pullman Street in Berry they were. Opposite Pullman Street, there's still a policeman's house there, up over the bridge. And then they moved into next door to the courthouse in the 1895. So there was always a police presence, yeah.
Any names come to memory?
Well, a lot of names, but not at the moment.
Okay. Why did they have police in Berry?
Because they had a courthouse as well. So you've got to remember that the courthouse is where you got your birth, death and marriage registered, as well as all the other things for the land board or anything that had to do with government. And then the police station was there and it had a jail. Because of all of... It's still the same today. We've still got police stations and jails, so, yeah. But before they went off to Sydney or wherever they were taken after the court case.
How many pubs were there in Berry? Did you go to the pub or...?
I used to go to the bottom pub. All right, so the Kangaroo Inn is now called the Berry Hotel, and that was there in the 1860s. That was the only pub in Berry at the time. Then we've got the top pub, what we call the top pub as well. Now only ever the two. A lot of them were from Temperance. A lot of them were in the lodges, and they were mainly Temperance lodges. So they went to church, and they belonged to a lodge. Now, a lodge in those early days, like the... used to look after widows and things, so you could get insurance through them, so you could pay a bit of money and your family would be looked after you died. And that's why the lodges came into being in those small areas.
So define a lodge. What does it mean?
The Masonic Lodge was different. A Masonic lodge is different to like a buffalo, these other lodges that they had in the early days in Berry.
Were they named?
Yeah, it's a Berry Lodge was Lodge Broughton. And they used to meet in the Showground Pavilion. Now, the Showground Pavilion was designed by H.G. Morton, and he was in a lodge. And even though the windows are all covered over now with board, in the early days, you could see the triangles from the Masonic, and all the Masonic symbols were in the windows around the pavilion and inside. And you weren't allowed to go inside that Masonic area, but then the showground now, you can walk in, you've got their exhibits in there at the shows. But the lodges in those early days were mainly Temperance, and the lodges would have women in them as well, so they weren't just like a Masonic lodge and then the ladies' lodge. It was, they were all in together, and it was to keep them off the grog.
So the Temperance movement, was that big in the region?
Yes.
And can you talk a bit about that historically? And
I haven't done a lot of research on the Temperance, but it was around the same time as the women got the vote, 1903, the women got really involved in Temperance movement. I don't know how much down here. We had one lady who was in, her husband was a minister, and she was in the Narrow Red Cross, and she was a Temperance. She was very big in Temperance, yeah.
So define Temperance. What does it mean?
No drinking.
So when you say these people were in lodges, were they there to sort of, not always I would assume, but to dry out type thing?
Well, it was a social gathering again, because they still had to have, if you didn't like sport.
Ah, yes.
What did you do?
And you weren't allowed to dance.
No. If you were in the Wesleyan church, you weren't allowed to dance or have music. Yeah. I think it was just a social outlet as well. There was, see, Red Cross wasn't around till after during the First World War. So what did they all do? They went on picnics. You saw a lot of picnics and farmers' picnics and all sorts of things. And remember, we didn't have electricity, so you only had to be able to go during daylight hours. You couldn't go anywhere at night because you had to take a kerosene lantern or a candle wouldn't go anywhere. And I think that they needed somewhere social, so it was a lodge. We call it a lodge now and they called it a lodge then, but I think it had the different connotations. Yeah, the Masonic lodge is completely different to the lodges they had then.
Is the foundations here sort of fairly strongly Church of England in the Shoalhaven with all the original settlers? Do you remember? Because I know, Dave, I was impressed David Berry left land for four denominations, which I thought was progressive of him.
Oh, yeah.
So because my background as a child, I was raised in a Catholic parish, and I noticed that he gave land to the Catholics to start a church.
Yep.
And other denominations around the same time.
Yes, so most of his little villages had a church. So we go from Fox Ground had a Wesleyan church, Broughton Village had a Wesleyan and a Church of England. Berry had the four. Jasper's Brush only had the one. Maru had one, and they were called Union churches. So they were different. Even though they were called Wesleyan, the two churches built by David Berry at Greenwood Point and Maru are brick churches. They were called Union churches so that anyone could use them.
That's what that means.
Well, I presume that's what that means, so that they all had different ministers could go there at different times for their congregations.
AI.
The AI Centre. Artificial Insemination Centre. So it was a big thing for Berry. Artificial insemination came in and they used to have people from all over the world come and look at the Artificial Insemination Centre. My grandmother used to board people who came from overseas. So we had an Indonesian there and we've had other people used to stay in her. She had a room and she'd boarded, rented it out to them. And they'd come and learn at the insemination centre. Yeah, but they had a big bull out the front. And as you drove into Berry from Nowra, there was a big sign, milk. But you don't see those anymore. And the artificial insemination centre closed. It became a university and then became a religious venue, so I don't know what it's used for now.
Where was it located?
On the Princess Highway at Berry.
Was it a research centre? Sort of thing?
Yeah, it would have been a research centre and they had all little buildings, like little kennels for all the cows. I don't know what they called them. And it was...
Pens.
Yeah, pens, but they were wooden pens and the cows would be there because I suppose they had to use them for their research.
The bull yards.
Yeah, so the so that was a big thing. And that was, I think that was brought in by McIntosh, Bruce McIntosh from Woodside Park. Yeah, I think that's where he started that. I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure it was in the 50s.
So do you see bull yards in the landscape as a young girl?
No.
So the AI Centre, well, can we talk about what you might know about the Illawarra Shorthorn?
There she is at Illawarra Shorthorns. Yes, very popular all the way down the coast.
They must have AI'd like that. They must have sent, like those bulls must be all over the world. At that time, they must have...
They used to import a lot, but then they used to have, I know that Pritchard at Number... He was one of the first to import cattle from Holland and Frisians.
Station Street, Jasper's Brush. Is that now called Jasper's Brush Road?
It could be, but it was the road that led to the station. There was also a wharf at Jasper's Brush. There used to be the... there's a big building. There was a big building at Jasper's Brush, and it was the... part of the butter factory. It had to be close to the railway station. And that's why you had... where you've got lights now at the railway stations, you always had gates for the other people to cross the railway line. So you always had families who were employed as opening the gates at the railway crossings. But now you've got lights, and we've got nothing at Jasper's Brush now. So yeah, and you haven't got a railway station at Omega either. In Omega, you went into Gerringong, and the road, in those days, the road came from Kiama all the way down Miller's Flats, turned off at Omega, went through Gerringong itself, and came out, and then the road went to either Crooked River or Broughton Creek. And that all changed in the 1930s. And they took the road away from Gerringong and became the Princess Highway. It was the main South Coast road.
So is it Jasper's Brush Creek where the wharf would have been?
Yeah. They had to have a wharf to get their stuff down before the railway came.
Yes.
So it went down.
You mean it went down the river?
Yeah, so it went down to the river. So it was picked up at the river, yeah.
How'd it go down the river?
Got no idea. But then you look at photos and you've got, for Broughton Creek, you wouldn't think that anything could move up there now, but it does. It did in the early days. It had punts going up and down, yeah.
What sort of reputation did Alexander Berry have? Through my research,
Alexander Berry wasn't down here very long. He moved up because him and Wollstonecraft came down in the early days. Wollstonecraft didn't live here. And Berry moved to Crow's Nest. He didn't come down. And all his letters in the Mitchell Library to David are telling David or John or William off for not doing the right thing here and the right thing there. So he had really nothing to do with the estate. And it was passed on. And David Berry was really the one that pushed it. But David Berry, there's no portrait anywhere of David Berry, so he must have been a very quiet...
humble.
Yes, man. And he thought of his tenants. And that was... he wanted to give them something because they'd done so much for him. Yeah.
I liked the sound of him when I've done a bit of reading on him.
Yes, it's just sad that there's no photos around. Well, I have never found them, and the Mitchell Library have looked for me too, so...
I've got a surprise, a little vox pop from a fifth-generation farmer. Just a quick vox pop with John Miller. John, how far back is your farming roots in Berry?
Well, in Berry, they go back to... well, my grandmother's people settled up in Bundiwala in the valley there at Berry Mountain in the 1850s and out of Jasper's Brush in the 1850s. But the Millers didn't move down till the Berrys sold their estate in the late 1890s. But we were in Gerringong in the 1830s. So we've been continuously milking cows since about 1832 up in Gerringong and then down Berry.
What was your mother's maiden name?
She was a Morrison.
Oh, sorry, the family you're talking about.
They were Chisholms, and a Chisholm married a Nylands out of Jasper's Brush and a Hannigan down at... they went back to Hannigan's down at Bowlong and yeah, fairly well established. And they went back to the Mosses that settled Moss Vale, so they were sort of, yeah, fairly... early settlers, the Morrisons.
We'll have to, when I engage you later in this project, we'll draw it all up, I think, because it's always so interesting. There's so much connection, as it is with dairy farming, because in that era, you know, it's fairly obvious social life and marriage and transport all connected to marrying people that weren't too far away. We're going to be engaging you, I am, about the cooperative as well. So there's some fairly significant history for the Shoalhaven.
Well, we've had a pretty strong connection with the Berry Rural Co-op for many years. My father was the director for 40 something years, and then I was a director. I'm still a director for 24 or 5 years. So we've had a really strong connection with the carpets, pretty close to our hearts. And yeah, we've done a lot of work to try and use the co-op as a tool to benefit farmers and their families. So.
And I've come across names like Leslie Crawford and the Crawfords, who were directors back in the mid to late 19th century as well, perhaps. What can you say about the Crawfords? So Gus Miller, who we had a chat to recently, mentioned the Crawfords not only as amazing rodeo buck jumpers, but, tell me about the Crawfords briefly.
Well, they came to the area when the Berry estate got sold up, and I think there were five of the siblings. There were five brothers. They all played, had their, got on, their father got them set up on their own farms, and they were all great musicians. They all played in the Berry band. One of the boys, still one of the sons of Les, still plays, Owen. He's been in the band about 75 years. So everything was very community back then, and the Crawfords had a great hand in whatever was happening in the community. There's not many of them left now, though.
And here we are at the showground, of course. We can hear the cicadas and a bit of traffic. What are you currently doing here? You've been busy because we're gearing up for the Berry Show in a couple of weeks. Tell me about your role.
Well, I've got the privilege of being on the committee of the Berry Shows Society, and for the past two shows, this will be my third show that I'll be playing the role as president. So I'm quite excited to get another great show on the ground, and just proud to serve the rest of the committee and the show society, and do whatever I can to play my part in making sure it's a success.
What do you think about, the first leg of it is the podcast, and I'll do the best job I can, but how important is it that we try to capture in a contemporary 21st century way, the stories and the memorabilia and the facts of dairying in the Shoalhaven?
Yeah, I think, it's vitally important. It's essential. It mightn't be important for somebody who's come out of the city and doesn't understand what a major role dairy farming and agriculture played in the community, but it was the absolute lifeblood of the community, of the whole area at one stage, of the whole colony. And there's so many great stories and characters and things that happened, and it's just a shame after a couple of generations that's gone, basically, all those stories, and it's just a shame for it all to be lost. And I just think it's a priority to be able to record all that history and have it there for descendants of the people. They may have moved from the area, generations ago, but I know at the Berry Show we have a show, Treasure, and we're honouring one of the local vets who fled the Nazis in World War II and came out as a refugee and got himself re-qualified. One of the farmers here had influence in the political scene and helped to get these refugee vets re-qualified, and every co-op, Alvin Park, Gerringong Berry, now had a European vet, and they were our first vets, basically. And before that, the blacksmith was the local vet too, and he's got an amazing story, and he's raised his family in Berry, and they've all moved away, but they come back every year. So it's going to be great to have them back here, honouring their dad. And that's the sort of thing we like doing, and this is an extension on that.
Yeah, that's right. And because there are so many important facts that the larger region and Sydney, the metropolis, the nation, internationally, things like the Illawarra, your particular breed that was so important at that time, the Illawarra Shorthorn.
Yep.
You've got the cooperative contribution, yep, that you were leaders. You were leaders in artificial insemination.
Yep. Yep.
And all of that needs to be valued and honoured for future residents, yep, really, don't they?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's been the starting point of a lot of, you know, a lot of things that agriculture takes for granted, I suppose, at the, you know, in the present day, you know, it's all about technology and, you know, efficiencies and everything else. But the starting point of everything started pretty well there in Berry. They imported the first Holsteins. They developed the AIS just up the road at Kiama, and the first Guernseys were imported to Berry, and the first artificial insemination centre in the 50s was started at Berry, and George Boris, who we were just talking about, he was ahead of his time collecting semen and storing it and running it around farms and, you know, inseminating other cows. Really, he was a pioneer and all that sort of stuff. So a lot of you know, technologies and techniques that are used today all around Australia, around the world, actually started in this region. So should be documented, I think,
And it's people like you whose voices can talk about those people that are no longer here. So that's what's also so important. And look, thanks for your time. We'll engage you a bit later. I look forward to the show. And yeah. Thanks, John, for your support.
Pleasure.
There will be some images and maps available for you to view relating to Episode 1 on my website, theresesweeney.com.au, under the podcast menu. Next fortnight, I'll be presenting Episode 2, Boxall's Lane, Maroo Meadow, with Richard Boxall. Thank you. Join me.